It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up, we take a look back at the year's news in Wisconsin with Rob Mentzer from the Wausau Daily Herald. First, whether you listen to your tunes on an MP3 player, an old-fashioned turntable, or maybe even on public radio, music is likely a big part of your everyday routine. Earlier this year, we looked at the idea that whatever we listen to at age 33 is likely to be the type of music that sticks with us. But even if that's true, it's always a treat to find out about some new releases that really stand out. Stephen Thompson is going to help us do that. He's an editor and reviewer for NPR Music and a panelist on the Pop Culture Happy Hour on All Songs Considered. He also co-created the NPR Music video series Tiny Desk Concerts. He joins us on Central Time a few times a year to share what he's been listening to. Today we ask him to zero in on great albums from the last year. Stephen, welcome back.
Hi, Rob. Great to be here.
Well, first of all, you had a blog post with your favorite albums of the year. Do people still think about albums these days, or is it all just a single here, a single there?
Well, I mean, it depends on who you talk to. I definitely still think of albums, and a lot of the stuff that I ended up picking and that I ended up gravitating toward really does stand as cohesive and coherent statements. I mean, like, the Kendrick Lamar record is probably the most critically acclaimed record of the year, To Pimp a Butterfly, and that thing is a 79-minute statement, and it's clearly thought out from start to finish, and it weaves in a lot of you know, recurring themes. You know, he goes back to this sort of spoken word piece that unfolds at greater and greater length as he goes through it. You know, several of these records that I chose really do stand as totally complete album-length statements and not just collections of MP3s.
And people, artists, are thinking in these terms, too. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of artists who will just have, here's eight fun singles on one compilation. But
there's
artists,
nothing wrong with that either.
Right, right. But some are thinking, hey, I'm going to make an album experience. I'm planning this thing out.
Yeah, and I tend to really admire that, and you know, I guess it's an area that I've become a little bit old-fashioned, you know, a little bit of a fuddy-duddy as a music listener. I really appreciate it when bands, you know, put a lot of thought into sequencing and making sure, you know, and sometimes, like, you know, building on recurring themes as an album progresses. But, you know, it really depends. There's no necessarily right or wrong way to do it. If you've got 10 singles that sound great on the radio and they don't necessarily cohere, but that's one album of 10 great songs, I'm in.
Well, you are an inspiration, or I should say one of the ways, Stephen, in which you're an inspiration is you don't just lock in on one genre, and I really appreciate that. I mean, and we'll get into the specifics, but this year you've got a country, Americana, rap, pop, some stuff I'd call punk. You like to switch it up there.
Well, and that's one area in which I'm enormously privileged to work at NPR Music. I'm surrounded by, you know, experts in different genres who are constantly peddling their favorite stuff. And so I'm able to cherry pick a lot of different genres. And that's something that you know, as I sing the gospel of NPR Music, it's one thing that I think our site is really useful for, is we're not genre specific. So you can go through and say, like, what's the best jazz record of the year? What's the, you know, what are the best country records of the year? What are the best hip hop records of the year? And listen to them for yourself and decide, oh, I see, you know, this is the best that this genre has to offer.
Well, it's time for a little less talk and a little more rock. I'll start with your number one pick, and we'll give a listen right away to the title track here. Joan Shelley is the artist, the album, and this song. We'll hear, listen a little bit of Over and Even.
We sight the morning softly, take to them easy. The scent of the wood and coffee, our cup is filling. Outside the river flows, its course unfolding. A strength that never knows, a sweet.
So this one's new to me. I wasn't familiar with Joan Shelley before, Stephen. A heck of a voice, obviously. Tell us about her album.
Yeah, this thing is just gorgeous. I mean, this is just, if you want your nerves to stand down, This is the record to put on. Joan Shelley's a singer-songwriter from Louisville, Kentucky, and she just sings these very calm, beautiful, kind of rustic, like you said, you know, kind of folk Americana songs. She's working with a guitarist named Nathan Salzberg, who is who kind of brings in these beautiful little guitar lines that run through it. And this record is perfect for illuminating the difference between, like, my favorite album of the year and the best album of the year. And when we talk about, like, the best album of the year, you're talking about some of these more grandiose statements or you know, records that are really pushing boundaries. This is not a boundary-pushing record, but it's so comforting and so beautiful and so consistently pleasant and pleasing that I just couldn't deny it as, like, my album of the year. It was my favorite album of the year and the one that I listened to over and over again.
Stephen Thompson from NPR Music is sharing his favorite albums of the year with us. By the way, that full list over at the Central Time Facebook page. We'll stay mellow now with your number two pick, Stephen. Sufjan Stevens, he's been around for a while, and he's known for thematical kinds of albums, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he often winds up going in a little bit more esoteric and playful directions. You know, every year he puts out a new Christmas record, and some of that stuff is just bonzo silly. This record is very spare, very interior, and very beautiful. And again, like, it's weird, you know, my top two records are so slow and quiet, but it does get peppier, I promise.
Oh, yeah.
But this record is called Carrie and Lowell, and it's largely about the death of his mother. Which, you know, sounds fun, right? But it's so beautiful and so thoughtful. He had Sufjan Stevens had a very complicated relationship with his mother, who was very troubled, and so he comes to terms with that loss in such a warm and generous way. It's not necessarily always an easy listen, this record, because it's so emotional, but it's just gorgeous.
Here's a track from that, No Shade in the Shadow of the Cross.
Now that I fell into your arms, my only lover, give out to give him. I search for the
that very spare sound you're talking about. Is that a good indication of the rest of the album?
Yeah, this whole record's pretty harrowing. And you can almost hear, like, even in that clip we heard, you can almost hear the air rushing through that song. It's so raw in a way that it's just, you know, I talked about how the Joan Shelley record is telling your nerves to stand down. This is a gentle record, but it is not a soothing record.
Well, let's get less gentle and less soothing still. Your next pick, Kendrick Lamar, King Kunta. This got is the track, I should say. But this album, To Pimp a Butterfly, tons of attention. A lot of people putting this on their top best of the year lists.
Yeah, this is probably the closest to a universally acclaimed record that came out this year. And I mean, it is a 79-minute album that is so full of ideas, and some of them will frustrate you. You know, some of them will interrogate you. Some of them will challenge you in such interesting ways. I listened to this record over and over again, and it kept like slipping from my grasp. You know, it's so, like I said, it's very, very packed with ideas. And at the same time, it has moments like this one, which, while dealing with some very powerful stuff, also has this very playful, three-dimensional, fun sound to it. I really love this record, but I feel like I'm still learning it.
Here's a bit of the track, King Kunta, a radio-friendly edit, I believe.
where you and I was walking, now I run a game, got the whole world talking, King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off, King Kunta, black man taking no loss. Oh yeah. Where you and I was walking, now I run a game, got the whole world talking, King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off.
And I wanted to hit that chord change there. That's what I, in this song, there's a couple call outs to James Brown and just some surprising changes in it. And there's a lot of variety on this album, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a sense of play to it, but also if you just do something as simple as like reading the lyric sheet, you just see like how deeply this guy kind of traveled into his own thought and into his thoughts on his place in the world. And man, it's a challenging record that manages to be very, very accessible at the same time.
We'll pick up our conversation with Stephen Thompson from NPR Music about his favorite albums of 2015. A lot more good stuff to come. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Join in with your favorite new music of 2015. We'll throw a cutoff date to November of last year, how about, in case you're not right there on the calendar. Is there a favorite album that you keep going back to again and again, something you're looking forward to next year, or something you wanted to ask Stephen about? Call 800-642-1234. And oh yeah, do you listen in album form? Do you just pick up a song here and there, maybe a greatest hits? 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. See Stephen's top 10 there. We're continuing our conversation with NPR's Stephen Thompson about his picks for the best albums of 2015. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you had a favorite album of the year. And let us know if you still do listen to albums. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll hear more of Stephen's suggestions. We'll go right to a caller first, though. We've got Jim on the line in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What do you got for us, Jim?
Shockwave Supernova by Joe Satriani.
He's been around for a while, guitarist, right?
Yeah, and his latest album is Shockwave Supernova. And it's amazing that each album he comes up with just greater, almost greater and greater guitar work as he does. And I do listen to the whole album. I throw it on the CD player and I just listen through and it's good to go.
All right, Jim, thanks so much. There are a lot of artists still out there. Satriani has been around for what, since the 80s or 90s,
yeah.
Stephen, but a lot of great ones still coming out with good stuff. Bowie, a new album just out or about to come out, right?
About to come out, yeah. I mean, it never stops at this point. You know, usually it slows down a lot in November and December and early January, but boy, we're starting 2016 right away, like you said, with the new Bowie record.
Well, checking out some more on your list now, Stephen. Another artist I wasn't familiar with, but this is one of my favorites based on very limited listening so far. Courtney Barnett, the album Sometimes I Sit and Think. Tell us a little bit about Courtney Barnett before we check out a track.
She's a singer-songwriter from Melbourne, Australia, and when she first came out a couple years ago, she played these very like kind of ambling kind of folk rock rambles,
really,
you know, like almost like spoken words set to these kind of loping kind of simple rhythms and stuff. And then she put out this record, and it is just a collection of rock anthems, still with that same sense of wordplay, but it's almost like she's doing it in front of Nirvana, you know, like these huge kind of grungy power pop riffs, and man, it's a fine, fine record. I've gone back to it again and again.
So here's Courtney Barnett. The song is Pedestrian at Best. Steven, this is one, every time there's one that you tell us about that I keep listening to for a while, I think this is the one for me. And yeah, I could see that Nirvana music, the fun wordplay, but a kind of a punk rock delivery style. A lot of fun.
It's got this kind of a sneer and a snarl to it, but also a little bit of a wink. And this was my song of the year. It just builds and builds and builds into this just stadium-sized jam. I think she's great.
And a pretty zany video to go along with it. There's a clown, there's a carnival. I'll leave it at that. If people want to check it out online, they can find it through your article, Stephen, linked on the Central Time Facebook page, your top 10 albums of the year. Now, let's change. Well, I was was going to say radically, but I could see some tie in here. Casey sure. Musgraves, this is country now, and the album is Pageant Material.
Yeah, I think she is dynamite. She put out my favorite record of a few years ago called Same Trailer, Different Park. And, you know, she's a young country singer, and a lot of what she's doing, particularly on this, her second record, is a lot of these mission statements about kind of what she stands for. And it's a lot of, like, go your own way, mind your own business, you know. But she's so charming and with just a beautiful songwriting voice that comes through again and again. She played a Tiny Desk concert this year that I highly recommend you Google and watch. You know, she brought her whole band, and they're all decked out in suits that sparkle with sparkling lights on them. And, you know, I mean, one of the best live shows I saw this year. She's just charming, but also with a really beautiful and very emotionally accessible voice.
Well, speaking of minding our own business or our own biscuits, as the case may be, here's Casey Musgraves from Pageant Material, and Biscuits is the song. Pretty straightforward country songwriting there, Stephen.
Straightforward country songwriting, but really, really, really accessible. You know, a lot of people I talk to are like, I like every kind of music except country. And it's like, man, you are not listening to the right country music, because there's a ton of really, really, really great country music being made. She, to me, is a great gateway drug into country music for people who think they don't like it.
All right. Well, let's check out one more. Again, a new one to me, Torres, which you write is the performer Mackenzie Scott. We'll listen to something from her album Sprinter now, the song A Strange Hellos.
Heather, I dreamt that I forgave, but that only comes in waves. I hate you the same.
Stephen, I was having a hard time detecting themes, but you've got the raw and you've got the soothing. This is back on the raw side here.
Yeah, but this record also goes in several directions at once. Mackenzie Scott is a really, really interesting young singer-songwriter. This record, Sprinter, explores all kinds of themes about, like, growing up in a very religious household and coming to terms with faith, you know, kind of losing it and regaining it. With these songs that can be very intimate and beautiful, or very intimate and kind of troubling, almost like the beginning of this song, and also just kind of crowd-pleasing. That particular song, Strange Hellos, you know, builds up into more and more of an anthem. She's another one of the better live performances I've seen this year.
I want to jump. We're not going to get your entire list in here, I'm afraid, Stephen. But Saint Seneca is one that I wanted to hear about a little bit before we play them. The song is Sleeper Hold, the album Such Things by Saint Seneca. Tell us about them.
Yeah, a band from Ohio. When they first kind of came out, they were notable primarily for the fact that they used all these weird instruments, you know, a lot of worldly instruments that you wouldn't even necessarily have heard of. But the music is very accessible. And this record, Such Things, explores all these, like, this particular song explores all these, like, psychological connections and stuff, but it's all framed in this perfect, like, 2.5-3 minute pop rock song. The songwriting on this record is so sharp, I kept coming back to it again and again.
Let's get a taste with the song Sleeper Hold by Saint Seneca. Stephen, before we let you go, anything you're looking forward to in 2016?
Oh man, I mean, I'm definitely looking. I've got this folder in my iTunes marked 2016, and I've promised myself that I'm not going to touch it until I've gotten through all of my 2015 music. But I mean, there's a new Mavis Staples record, there's a new Esperanza Spalding record, there's a new Shearwater record. That's a band I just love every one of their records. Lots of different stuff. I mean, the first quarter of the year is usually when a lot of record companies really like to put out new artists. And so I'm very, very excited about just digging in and finding as many things I've never heard of as humanly possible. I think that discovery process is always my favorite part of any year in music.
Well, talking to you about it is one of my favorite parts. Stephen, thanks as always. That was Stephen Thompson, editor and reviewer for NPR Music and All Songs Considered, going out with another one of his picks, Patty Griffin with Made of the Sun. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. As we get ready to close the book on 2015, we want to take a look back at some of the biggest news stories from around the state this year. Wisconsin saw a number of exciting, sometimes strange, sometimes tragic headlines this year, from the governor's presidential run to Black Lives Matter protests following the death of Tony Robinson to the scandal that rocked the Toma VA Medical Center. Joining us now to look back on these and other stories that happened in 2015, we have Robert Mentzer, storytelling editor for the Wausau Daily Herald and Gannett Central Wisconsin Media. You usually hear him with us on Friday afternoons. Robert, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thanks.
Well, one of the stories, of course, that got the most attention this year was Governor Walker's presidential campaign here. Let's give a listen to his announcement.
And so, after a great deal of thought and a whole lot of prayer, We are so honored to have you join with us here today as we officially announce that we are running to serve as your President of the United States of America.
And we could, of course, Rob, have played a much more somber announcement later with him withdrawing from the campaign. Now, recap the rise and fall of Governor Walker's presidential campaign for us.
Sure. His 70-day presidential campaign. That's what, you know, officially from the time of that announcement to the time he dropped out on September 21st was barely over 2 months. But, of course, those of us in Wisconsin know, and really those, let's be honest, people in Iowa or New Hampshire or people who watch cable news know that he'd been running for considerably longer than that. He started actively campaigning at least since January, and you know he was Republican frontrunner for a minute there. He gave a speech at the Iowa Freedom Summit on January 24th that really electrified the conservative audience there, and it was I think for Wisconsinites he was hitting some points that were rather familiar to us: the Act 10 law, the recall. But he had a fired up style, and there was a sense that maybe he was the conservative who could knit together these different parts of the Republican coalition. And then that was sort of the highlight of his campaign, was that early time in the sun. It really sort of got derailed over. You know, you could call them gaffes or you could call them overreactions by the news media, but he definitely got in trouble over everything from flip-flopping on his position on immigration policy. He refused to state definitively that President Obama was a Christian. And then pretty soon there was this other guy in the Republican race, Donald Trump, if you've heard of this guy. And Walker just had trouble getting oxygen in the race, and it ended badly.
And people criticized, Republicans in particular, criticized the tactics in a way of the campaign when he was at the peak there. Put a lot of money into developing a very strong campaign presence in a lot of key primary states. When he wasn't at the top of the polls, money dried up, and it was an unsustainable effort from there on out, it sounded like.
And he raised a ton. So he raised a ton of money for his super PACs as well. So he had a lot of money behind his campaign, but it reached a point where he didn't have the money for the sort of basic operations of establishing an Iowa campaign or going to New Hampshire or whatever.
And the big story, of course, from the Wisconsin perspective was what all this meant for Wisconsin and what Wisconsin made of his run. What did we learn during and after that campaign?
So he certainly ended the campaign at his lowest approval ratings that he has had in Wisconsin. It's something that we've talked about, and whether there will be a long-term effect of that, it's hard to say. I don't myself know. But for certain, it took a toll on his popularity in Wisconsin because it was perceived, and it was in fact true, that he was spending an awful lot of time outside of the state. And he since has said himself that it's hard to be a governor while also running for president. Which is, as you might expect, it would be hard. And so it took a toll in the state budget process. And certainly after he dropped out, I think that there were a lot of people who had in Wisconsin who had soured on the process. Now maybe he bounces back, but that was certainly reflected in opinion polls this fall.
Talking to Rob Mentzer from the Wausau Daily Herald. He's in our Wausau studios right now, looking at the big Wisconsin news stories of 2015. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. What's yours? What do you think was the most important thing, most interesting thing that happened in Wisconsin politics in particular in 2015? Call 800-642-1234. Rob, you just mentioned that budget process being affected by the governor's run, the state budget. We do it every 2 years here, sometimes fairly smooth sailing, sometimes a little rockier, and there were some major sticking points. So where did we run into trouble there?
Sure. The state budget is, as the legislators like to say, is the only thing that has to pass. And so they are constantly packing in a bunch of policies and pet projects and so on and so forth. And it's a big battle every 2 years. And this year, there were some legislators on both sides of the aisle. There were some Republicans who saw Governor Walker as sort of absent in that process. And also, it was just a fact that the fact that he's running in a Republican primary constrained what the policy options were available. So there was no possible way that the state was going to expand Medicaid in any form, which would be seen as a capitulation to Obamacare. Another one that had a big effect on the state budget this year was absolutely no new taxes to pay for infrastructure. But the problem was, the governor and a lot of legislators still wanted to buy a bunch of new infrastructure for the public. And so initially he proposed a budget that had $1.3 billion in borrowing for road projects. And that turned into a fight with some of the Republican legislators who didn't want to borrow that much money. That was deficit increasing. They eventually passed a budget that borrowed about $500 million. And since then, they've added on another couple hundred million since then. So that was a major fight in the state budget, though. Ultimately, Walker got almost all of the deficit spending that he wanted on those.
And then also Milwaukee Bucks Arena and the UW system were also big stories in the budget process.
Yeah, so the UW system proposal specifically to cut $250 million from the system generated a massive backlash in February and into March and into April as the budget was being worked on. And it was so it was an outcry. There were all sorts of the local chancellors at smaller campuses were talking about the ways that this was going to affect their budgets. That was seen as a real blow to higher education, which has over time has had state funding eroded already to a great degree. And so it was a political flashpoint. And it's another, you know, it's another case though, Rob, where there was this outcry. We had, I remember sort of quoting legislators who were saying, we're going to look at this. Maybe we'll exempt the 2-year campuses. Maybe we're going to bring the amount of this cut down. But when it came down to it, they looked at the other budget priorities. They looked at tax cuts that had been passed or other spending that they wanted to do, and ultimately push through that big cut to the UW system.
One thing that almost made it into the budget at the last minute but didn't, and this is one of the biggest outcries in the whole budget process, an attempt to change the state's open records laws.
Right. Yeah. This was a win for us media types. Right. It was over 4th of July weekend, as I recall. Legislators unveiled this proposal that would have significantly limited what media or just any citizen could request for records, specifically regarding the drafting of legislation. So it turned into a huge outcry. There were editorials throughout the state. There was commentary. There was the media, the news media, really raised a ruckus about it. And it took only a matter of days that it was dropped. The sort of the best argument or the only possible argument for it was the idea that somebody who was a victim of a crime or a victim of domestic violence might want to work with a legislator and not have their name be released publicly. But I think anybody who looked at this, at removing this stuff from public view, saw the many other more nefarious ways that having these people who write legislation, not having them be released to the public, how that could be abused. So that was short-lived, and hey, I'm in the media. I say that's to the good.
Let's step outside the budget for a moment. What do you see as some of the biggest things that came out of the legislature and got signed into law, again, outside of the budget process itself?
So there were, you know, it's funny. I was speaking with with the producers of this very program, and when you really look at the list, there were a lot of major sort of conservative policy priorities that were accomplished this year. That Wisconsin is now a right-to-work state, sort of a new limit on unions. There was a 20-week abortion ban that was passed. That is likely there's legal challenges and it might face legal scrutiny. But I mean that was a law that was passed. There were changes to an arcane union-related policy called the prevailing wage and some other policies as well, all of which you could point to as big sort of conservative victories for the state's conservative majority. It's funny. I think if it weren't for Governor Walker's losing presidential campaign, you would have to say that the guy had a great year.
Talking to Robert Mentzer right now about some of the biggest news stories in Wisconsin this year. And we want to hear from you. What is a news story that caught your attention, that you paid close attention to? The biggest story in your part of Wisconsin that maybe the rest of us didn't pay as much attention to? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We continue our conversation now about the biggest news stories from around Wisconsin in 2015. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was the biggest story in Wisconsin news, the biggest story in your part of the state? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We have Rob Mentzer with us from the Wausau Daily Herald. Well, Rob, getting outside of the Capitol now, a story not far from your neck of the woods now, the ongoing scandal at the Toma VA Medical Center. Bring us up to date on that one.
Sure. So this broke in January when it was revealed that a doctor who was the chief of staff at the Toma VA Medical Center named David Houlihan had been placed on leave. This was itself a response to a lengthy investigation about the prescriptions of opiates to veterans who sought care at the VA. So what initially there had been an investigation into this practice. There was an internal inspector general's report that found cause for concern, and it said in the report that there was a significant variance in prescriptions of opiates, that it was too high. But that report was not made public until this year, when there was investigative reporting on this. Some facts came out about a Marine veteran named Jason Simkakoski from Stevens Point, who died in August 2014 while in care in Toma, in the psychiatric ward there. And what happened was a cascade of disturbing revelations about what was going on. The place, veterans referred to the Toma VA as Candyland, and referred to Houlihan specifically as the Candyman, because that was their way, apparently, their way of treating the illnesses that they would bring to the VA. So this. It did come to light. There was action taken. In the last couple months, Houlihan was finally fired and was fired effective in November 9th from his job. So they say that they are taking steps to try to reform the Toma VA. But there's also been a bunch of questions about why this report was kept secret, why it required the work of a whistleblower who tried himself for years to bring attention to this story and only just succeeded after a lot more harm had been done.
That story's still going on in a lot of ways. Another more recent scandal came to light. The Lincoln Hills Youth Facility, we've talked to you about this, Rob, made headlines. This is a state facility now. Allegations of misconduct and abuse among guards, dangerous conditions for staff and inmates at this juvenile corrections facility. What do we know so far in this story?
Yeah, this is a more recent story. It was just last month that the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel first reported on the unsealing of what had been a John Doe investigation, a sort of secret probe of allegations of misconduct at Lincoln Hills at this youth. It's called Lincoln Hills School. It's a prison. It's a youth prison in northern Wisconsin, sort of north of Merrill, Wisconsin, and this. This probe had lasted for about a year. At the end, there were two administrators who were removed from their positions. And this is, expect this to be a major story of 2016 if we're here a year from now, because I think that we're barely getting started in what the fallout is likely to be as a result of this, because there are deep allegations, credible ones, that the facility has been understaffed, that there was not a good system for reporting misconduct by guards, that guards themselves were put at risk by administrators who looked the other way for misconduct by the youth in the facility. So it's a serious story, and I would be shocked if we didn't see legislative actions and much more scrutiny on this in coming months.
Well, really dramatic. I mean, a State Department of Justice raid on a State Department of Corrections facility. We do not see this kind of thing happening.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. No kidding.
Talking to Rob Mentzer from the Wausau Daily Herald, looking at some of the biggest stories from around Wisconsin in 2015. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with the story you've been following. Carl is with us on the line in Madison. Carl, hi.
Yes, hello. I think another story that may be 2016's one of their largest is, a lot of people have heard about the Keystone pipeline or KXL pipeline out west that was, at least for the time being, pushed back by activists there, while quietly the Enbridge Corporation here in Wisconsin has made Line 61 the largest tar sands pipeline in North America. And the concern is that they've done this. The Dane County intervened and said, hey, we want to make sure there's appropriate insurance for this thing, at least where it runs through Dane County. And Enbridge quietly went around them to the state and got the county's ability to require that kind of insurance, made it illegal. So I think the big story for 2016 may be that the Enbridge Corporation is going to further expand that corridor and take more of people's property and maybe using eminent domain to do so.
Carl, thanks a lot for bringing that up. And Rob, I think if I can widen that a bit, the wider issue of how we move oil products, petroleum products through Wisconsin between the pipelines Carl's talking about and then controversies over trains carrying oil, sometimes more volatile than usual oil.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, and yeah, Carl is right. This is going to be a big story to watch for sure. I mean, it's a huge pipeline. It crosses the state, and it carries hundreds and thousands and millions of gallons of crude oil. So it's tar sands from Canada, right? I mean, it is precisely the same issue as the Keystone Pipeline. And yeah, we saw even just recently those train crashes. There's a potential, a lot of safety risks from running that oil on trains, and there's a lot of environmental risks to running it in pipelines. So yeah, I think it's a real problem.
Covering some other issues around the state, of course, a lot of national conversation up to this very day about police-involved shootings, police relations with minority communities. Wisconsin, no exception. The death of Tony Robinson in Madison, protests that followed that, protests about the earlier death of Dontre Hamilton in Milwaukee, putting the state's police-involved shooting laws, relatively new procedures, to the test. This has been a big one in Wisconsin.
Right, and you're right. In some respects, Wisconsin is ahead of some other states because we have that law that requires an outside investigation of any time there is a fatal police shooting. I think that's when it kicks in. So we saw on March 6th, a Madison police officer named Matt Kenny shot and killed a 19-year-old African American named Tony Robinson, who was unarmed. And that in itself spurred a lot of the reaction. Now, it should be said that subsequently investigations determined that Robinson had attacked people, had struck the officer, and that officer was found not to have broken any law. But this came, I mean, it came sort of not that long after police shootings in Ferguson and Ferguson, Missouri, and elsewhere, and it fit into what is a mass protest movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, and we saw that in the state capitol. We saw marches in Milwaukee and even across the state. I mean, there was a Black Lives Matter march blocks from where I'm sitting today in Wausau, and I think that there were statewide effects too. There were discussions about police body cameras. Now, Madison did not adopt that. Wausau and other communities have adopted plans to equip police with body cameras, which is one sort of, I think, a direct response to some of those protests.
One more story of Wisconsin on the national stage. Paul Ryan, congressman, former vice presidential candidate. He's no stranger to a national profile now. Speaker of the House, apparently, and I think it seemed to some people thought genuinely, a very reluctant Speaker of the House.
He did not want to do that job, did he?
Who would?
Yeah, well, right. I mean, in fairness to Paul Ryan, it's a horrible job. When Speaker John Boehner stepped down, there was a vacuum for a while and no Republican wanted to or was able to or politically was in a position to step up, and until Janesville's own son Paul Ryan first issued sort of a list of demands and conditions for taking the job, and then took the job. And to be honest, there's been a lot of sort of deals made in these last few months of the in the first months of the Ryan speakership. I don't know what that necessarily means, but I guess he can point to some accomplishments.
I want to wrap up, Rob, with a quick nod to the world of sports. UW Badgers basketball early this year made it to the finals, didn't quite win it. I don't follow college basketball closely. I followed this run. It was really exciting. Was that just here in Madison, or were you watching it up there in Wausau,
too? No, it's big. This is one of those things that it makes you realize how long a year is, because this is something that this actually happened in 2015.
Yeah.
You're sort of looking like, oh, wait, yeah, that's right. And it was made a celebrity of Frank Kaminsky, mm-hmm. Frank the Tank, who was a National College Player of the Year. And, of course, unfortunately, evil triumphed over good mm-hmm. in the NCAA Finals as Duke did defeat the Badgers. So.
Well, Rob, when we say it all like this, it was a busy year. More to come in 2016. Thanks, as always, for joining us.